Hello and welcome to this week's Big Boat Interview. My name is Cécile Gauert, U.S. Editor for Boat International Media and co-chair of the Boat Design Innovation Awards. A few weeks ago, I had a fascinating conversation with Patrick Join and Sanjit Mankou, co-founders of the Paris-based agence Join Mankou. They met in 2001 when Sanjit was looking for a place to crash in Paris and spend time on Patrick's couch. The meeting bloomed into a friendship and an adventure in design that continues to this day. They have worked with clients such as Chef Alain Ducasse, Van Cleef & Arpels, Air France, and Royal Caribbean. They are currently finishing work on the interior of the 75-meter Admiral yacht Kensho, their first yacht commission. We chat about design, of course, but also travel, passion, sustainability, and inspiration. Come along for the ride, and I hope you enjoy it. Thank you for joining us today. How are you?
Very good.
It's a Friday. Fridays are always good days.
Great. I agree. So you have a very interesting multicultural background as well as a design background. How did you meet and what brought you together?
So what brought us together is maybe pure luck, but a wish, a childish wish to make the world better, but also our love for drawing, designing, inventing, pushing boundaries, never happy with what we have, dream. We don't know. We didn't know. And love for not so straight lines. yeah. And yeah, that's adventure. No limit. I think we can both stand when people are trying to contain us and say,
that's a good one.
Yeah. And we push. And always excited by passion of other people. People who ring the bell here and say, we would like you. We like what you do. We don't know what you do, but we would like to do a project together. Every time when there is like this feat, we have already opened our sketchbook and we are already starting to draw. It's very intuitive like this.
We had a previous chat a little while ago. We were talking about the fact that you both have the product design, the architect training, and you were describing how these two similar but different discipline help you bring a design that is cohesive. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
What we were just saying, when Patrick was saying that it's true, what brought us together was just an accident. I was looking for a couch to stay on. He happened to have a couch in Paris, and that's how it started. but I think more deeply than that, there's maybe a magnetic pull of a desire for something that is a little bit hard to find in this day and age. In this day and age where everything is, I think, through insurance, cut up between architecture, interiors, objects, clothing design, smell design, sound design, all these other things. We just want something's one beautiful, coherent experience and something that's got depth to it. So in a way, you can collaborate with other people, but you don't want it to stop. And certainly you don't want Jekyll and Hyde. You don't want the inside and outside that don't speak to each other. You mean, as has been done quite a bit. So really, we always wanted to go further. And that's what's really great about working together is, there's no stone left unturned. And with both of our backgrounds, again, from school and looking at things at small scale, big scale, and also both of us, we've made things all of our lives, really with our hands. So, and we continue to do that. So it's between culture and art, which is also something we end up doing. Patrick spends his weekends painting and doing incredible paintings. And then, but we're also making things ourselves. I'm spending my weekend as a luthier making a musical instrument. So the question is, knowing how things are made, knowing how to bend something, knowing how to heat something, knowing when plastic melts, knowing how we can form glass, knowing how we can do things. And so it took us a while to have the technical knowledge to explore and to go to factories and see how to do things. And when we came together, we were both had this desire, and we had the technical knowledge of how to make things so that we could push the boundaries and ask people to do something which everybody, I think, wanted, but maybe didn't have the guts to ask for or to push the limit so that we could get there. And so that's what we've been doing for the last 20 years together, is finding out how to find this really deep satisfaction of making places that should exist in the world that don't
exist.
That's
wonderful.
Yet. Give people the gift of new things.
That's wonderful. I did see in one of the newsletter that you kindly shared with me some of the work that was going on La Mamounia and the spaces that you reinvented. And it's very poetic and amazing. But let's talk a little bit about the work you've done in the marine space. So I understand that Kensho is your first yacht commission, but you had done some work on a cruise ship with Celebrity Edge. Can you talk to me about that a little bit?
I'm coming from Nantes.
Yes.
Okay, so not very far from Saint-Nazaire.
So on the coast, by the sea.
Yeah, and all my family, I mean, my grandfather and cousins and uncles, and most of them were working on the yard of Saint-Nazaire to build ships.
Okay.
Okay, so my grandfather was a welder on my mother's side. And the other part of the family, they were also working for the yard, but like for company around. When I was a kid, we would often go to Saint-Nazaire to see the launch of, or to see from far away the construction of an enormous, gigantic structure. And so it's a part of the history and the dream. And my grandfather, like 6,000 other guys, was a welder on the Normandy.
Wow, that's amazing.
Okay, so I have this glorious thing, glamorous thing, coming from a working class
background,
but also to see to have touched something at this so glorious was we were proud of it.
I'm sure it's one of the most magnificent boats ever built.
Yeah, so when we were asked to work on it, we thought, okay, there is something to do, even if it's it's not easy to choose well my words, but it's true, not easy, because all this amazing machine sometime. They are a little bit tacky. So how can we put, how can we find our space, our way of working for a project like this? And it was maybe a little bit scary at the beginning, but the client, RCCL, they had a very strong vision, and they understood also that this way of the new way of leisure was changing, and that's why they asked us and they took us on board on their project, and at the end we did this what we call the Grand Plaza for them. And I think we have this very glamorous space.
It's what we tried to do, because you know there was a little bit when we started this idea that it had so much potential in we also love travel, right? So in what it was we love travels and all these kind of vessels and means of going somewhere. You mean love cars, love, because it's really this question of freedom, sure. Right? And airplanes and boats and trains and so this question of, before airplanes, this used to be the most glamorous way of traveling from one end, from one continent to another. It was cross-continental travel in a way that could be, you were either in a cargo ship or you were really in this thing that could have been incredibly glamorous. And then they'd lost their polish, right? They turned into a little bit of a Las Vegas. So could we put that glamour back in?
A little
it?
Bit.
And one of the first things we did was you said, let's celebrate every day we're on the water. Because every day we're on the water is not a normal day for us normal people. I mean, we don't have yachts, unfortunately. Yeah. Maybe not yet.
Not yet.
Exactly. But but there's something exceptional. And even when we're working on Kensho, there's still a childlike awe of every single day you're on the water. Every single time we go to the Monaco Boat Show and we sit on the back or we take the tender, there's still something like a little kid grinning with the gigantic grin of like, it's so unbelievable. It's as unbelievable as taking the helicopter to get to Monaco to just being on this little sailboat or on this tender. And so what we want is, all this idea that we try to forget about it, that we're on the land, or that, even with Kensho, again, this idea that do we do a house? Do we make it look like a house, which is windows, which have a great view? It's like, no, we want to celebrate that we're on the water. We want to remember every day because it's only maybe 15, 20 days per year that you're on the water. And each one of those has to count. I want to remember each one of those. So we said, if you're thinking about your savings and going on a vacation somewhere and you're in this place, I want to remember every single time on a boat. So we looked at the structure, how the boat is made, how do they cut the steel. We didn't want to cover it up with something that looked like it came from the... We wanted to do the opposite. We start to strip off all the flesh and expose the bones. And we start to work with the people who are doing all the metal engineering and saying, look, can we do that slightly different? It'll take you a little bit more. It'll cost a bit more. But then we're not going to cover it up again. So we're going to show the incredible bones of what you guys do. And that was the beginning. And with Richard Fain from RCCL, one of the most important things that he explained to us was this idea of ship shape. He starts to look at our designs and goes, but that really, I don't know what it is. It's intriguing and it's very ship-shaped. I said, Richard, what's the ship-shaped thing? He said, well, it's that it works with the laws of physics of a boat. You mean the fact that, in a doorway, you don't do a 90-degree corner, you do it rounded so you can disperse the stresses so that you don't cause stress. You recognize that you're at the mercy of the forces of nature that are going to start to caress you and sometimes push you and hug you a little bit too tight and, all these kind of things. So there's something about an aesthetic. It's not an aesthetic, it's like planes are the shape they are because they are molded by, and you have a direct response with the forces of nature. So we're starting to develop that, understand that a little bit more through working at a huge scale, but it was still there about how we can do. And while we know about a lot of materials, we didn't know how malleable steel is. My God, they make spaghetti out of steel. And when we go to the shipyard, it's unbelievable. We see the Richard Serra sculptures and you realize he does them in shipyards. Now we realize why when you see the big machines that are kind of bending in this and that. So it allowed us, like when we go to Venice or Murano and we see how people work with glass, or when we go to a great workshop and find out about concrete or stone, it gives you new possibilities of what you can do in this technique, in this material. And then you begin to combine things and it opens new doors. And that's why every year is never like the year before.
Yeah.
So did the commission that you had on Celebrity Edge naturally lead you to your first super yacht, or how did the project with?
Well, I think we were very fortunate to have this first mise en bouche. It's not the same level of refinement.
It's not the same budget or same clientele at all, but it gives you an introduction to this world.
And the way a yard is organized to make a huge one or a smaller one, it's the same. The way the technique, the way it's built, the fact that you can't change 1 millimeter anything when it's weld. And you understand. It's not like a house, in architecture. Okay, when your pillar are there, you Okay, but you can always cut one and, okay, maybe put a beam and you can change something. It's static. A vessel, no, it's totally different. So when this is designed and made, even just designed, you don't change. And it's very interesting. But like a car or like a train. And we are used to work in this way. So it's funny because it's two world, design and architecture. For us, it's one. Mm. And we are used to go from one to the other. There is like we are like fish in the water for that. So there was not so difficult. Huh?
And the other thing to point out is, you know, while we spoke about the work we do with RCCL, I mean, the other work we're doing is, you know, we're doing shops for Van Cleef & Arpels, you know, and you're talking about stores where someone's going in to buy a 10 million euro necklace. So we're also are very well steeped in the world of luxury dreams and glamour from private residences that we've done kind of around the world, to the work with Van Cleef & Arpels and many 3-star restaurants. I think we have, I don't know, 20 or 30 stars by now of all the restaurants that we've done. So we know this, and what that allows us to do is, it's not a question of pretension or budget, but it's more so, how do you make something exquisite, and how do you go to a certain length where no one else has gone, so you can push the limits? And this is something that we know very, very, very well. So when the first commission came, but we got to put these two worlds together, right? And so what's really beautiful about the yacht was to be able to take these two different experiences of almost engineering and product design and put it together with something as beautiful as residential design, which is something that's really human and really personal. But you mean to do that on the scale of a floating cathedral? Right. It still is, because we're not finished yet. Yes. A beautiful experience.
Can you tell me a little bit what the brief was? Was it very extensive, or was it just more of an idea? Or how did you develop the project from this first contact with?
I think it came first because the name Kencho was already there.
Yes.
So. This idea of harmony, the influence, the connection with nature, the fact he really celebrate, and that's why it was so nice to work with Udo, because he's not just someone who just say, okay, I want a 75 meter long. No, he really worked on the architecture, on the space, on the fact to have high ceiling, he knows very well what's a yacht. He has used them for a long time, and he knows well. So he knew what he didn't like in them, what was not working for him. So he really worked a lot on this.
No, he was, you know, I think just like us in the beginning, this idea of being a bit frustrated by what was out there. And so he wanted to innovate and innovate strongly. And so, as Patrick said, he really got into the bones and the structure of this thing. Where do I put what? You mean, how come when I'm a client on a boat, where I really want to be is I want to be out front with this incredible view, and I want to see where I'm going, and I want to see the sunrise, the sunset from the front, and not always look at the back of the waves. Simple, really essential things that maybe it sounded really normal when he first talked to us. He'd never done a boat before. He's like, they don't do that. Like, really? And then he's like, you know, ceiling heights. You mean I want at least 3.2 meters because that's what I want in my house. Like, yeah, it makes sense. Like, you don't normally get that. Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we realized that he had really spent a lot of time on the experience of things about, I mean, full beam rooms, how do you lay out things, and had spent a lot of time before we got to the project of making sure that the bones were right. And then he confided in us to line them.
No, because it's so important, because, you know, what I was saying maybe a little bit before, if we have a bad space, we will just only do decoration, and we cannot make it a better space. It will still be a bad space, well decorated.
Right.
Well, there's a phrase I love to tell in the studio, or sometimes to clients, like, we don't do lipstick on a pig. You know what I mean? It's like, if you have bad bone structure, you have bad bone structure, and there's nothing, you can throw as much crystal glass and you know what I mean, gold at it. You mean it never works, but there's something about a natural beauty that comes from great bone structure that you don't need anything. It just radiates a type of its own emotions, and that's the killer. That's what you're always looking for. And that's why when we're saying that, you know, we would love working on architecture and interiors and doing, how do you, doing a great room is one thing. Situating a great room next to another room is another. And once you start to add those things, slowly they become like scenes of an opera or chapters in a great book. And the more chapters you put, the more the thing has depth, the more the thing can grow, the more the thing becomes something of with weight, which is really great.
Now, there's a long list of people who get credit for the design of this yacht, obviously, and they will architect, exterior designers, and so forth and so on. I'm always fascinated by that. How do you work with, it's not uncommon to have an exterior designer, interior designer, but how do you define who does what? Because, I mean, ultimately, as you were saying before, you were looking for harmony, a holistic experience, particularly on a yacht. So how did that work? And you can describe a little bit of the process of how far you go to the exterior or how far they're coming into the interior.
For the exterior, we did nothing.
But it's also because we did nothing because when the client called us, and the project team called us to see if we could work out, the exterior of the boat had already been designed.
Okay. All right.
So the exterior had been designed and basically the main position of the rooms had already been established. So we got into this project, not from the beginning, but a little bit later on. And then a little bit like you're saying about interior and exterior, while we started off with the interiors, what was really clear, I think, to the client afterwards was that, you mean this whole thing of Jekyll and Hyde? You don't want to have two different characters. It needs to be one, but you have two different groups with maybe a shared sensibility, but different ways of looking at things in different...
I think we spoke a lot, but also with the designer of Kensho, and I think they were pretty happy we were there because they saw also the things we were doing. Of course, we were new to this world, so at the beginning we needed exchange.
Yes,
we needed to understand how things are made. So of course, it took us maybe more than professional, but the way we drew, they show us all the exterior, the decks, and we did some comments, and it was an exchange, and so at the end it became, I think, and also because he's really he's not only a client, but he's really participating in the design, got influences, ideas from both team, and it was able to transmit to everyone his vision, his comment. So at the end, it's coherent. It's harmonious.
He was very good at orchestrating everyone. So you mean the team of Azur and Holger from Germany were working on the exteriors. So as we, it took us a little bit of time to get up to speed, as Patrick said, on the interiors. And then when it got to the thresholds, you mean they gave us the freedom to look at the exterior spaces to figure out how the outside influences some of the materiality of the inside, and then how some of the inside comes to the outside. Then we were designing certain elements, some lamps from the inside that will come out to the outside decks. The designers who were working on the furniture for the exterior for Azur, they came to the studio for a week to spend some time with our product designers and industrial designers to look at the furniture. Okay, maybe you want to tighten up this line. Maybe you want to do this over here. So there was really the idea of jumping in a pool together and sharing things. At the same time, when it got down to the choice of, let's say, what colors the outside of the hull, they would ask for our opinion, but it was really clear that the responsibility was, you mean, the exterior team, and you give them, you mean, the credit and also the trust, you know what I mean, that everyone needs in order for it to work together. Right. So it's not, because that's the other danger, is everyone's stepping on each other's feet and there's too many people trying to make a decision. And you know what I mean? So exteriors are still exteriors, interiors are still interiors in this boat, but there is a cross-pollination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it does. I mean, from, like I said, I have not seen the boat before, but, you know, from renderings and photos and some of the stuff that I've seen, it looks very cohesive, which is, you know, not always the case. So, did you also design the tenders or?
No, unfortunately we, no, but that was done by the exterior team. They did the tenders as well. We're a bit too late to get into all
right,
of that.
Right, yeah.
Next time we're dying to, plus the helicopter, plus the plane, you know what I mean, and the car to get to the airplane.
But next time, like for a car, because we are able to design cars and trains. So I hope we will design also the exterior.
Uh-huh. You know, we were working on a competition for a project in Saudi Arabia where we had to kind of figure out how to bring people to the side of the world and really help with, again, another big team with engineers and architects on what's the travel experience from A to Z from, okay, we didn't work on the plane, but once you get to the airport, how do you get to these sites? The site was the size of Switzerland, but how do you get around? So we started to design the train, but not only did we design the train for the clients, but we also, again, Patrick's way of thinking and this rigor of industrial design is it's got to work. So the first thing is, if we're doing all these sites, how does the garbage and how does the staff get around? Are they on the same train? Are they? So we did this double-ended train with this track in the middle. We had two things, one going in each direction, one going on top, one going on the bottom, so we could have services and goods coming in one way and people on the top. Then we start to design everything down to the little trolley that goes in the train. So it's really the idea of, as we said before, doing something that's a holistic experience. And part of that is making sure that everything works. It works seamlessly and there's not going to be a problem. You're not going to see something unsightly. So the garbage is going to pass underneath you and you're never going to see it as you're jetting off towards your other destination.
Hmm. Well, that's great. Did you get to go to the yard a lot? How did things work out with COVID? And I guess we have to bring it up because unfortunately...
We're still yes. going. We're going there all the time.
And we have someone with on the yard. Every day.
That's what we have to do. So in order to make it work, as borders started getting shut down and we started to get into the construction of the interiors, the only solution was to try to get away from travel. So our project manager, Dimitri, who's quite unbelievable and has a lot of background in boats and has lived around the world with a young family, agreed to move his whole family within 200 meters of the yard. We got him a house. We got him a place. His kids are now learning from
Italian,
Russian, French, English, and Italian now. They're fluent after a year in Italian school. And it's the right way to do it because, you know, he's got to feel comfortable and not have to worry about being locked down or this and that so that we can actually give the client Udo, the best thing that we can possibly do, and we have to have eyes and ears on the ground because we haven't done this type of project yet with a new shipyard, an Italian shipyard. So we're there 24/7.
Wow, okay.
And then so we're commuting with him, and so I'm going down next week. We end up going down every 4 weeks, sometimes even more. COVID's being difficult. The most difficult thing about COVID's being worldwide sourcing on multiple continents.
Right.
So for example, when you're trying to get the best of everything, silk carpets come from Nepal. They come from India, right? So then during COVID, the issue was that the group here in France, they were getting their carpets made in India in their chef de projet, their project manager was in Nepal, but he couldn't get a visa to get through because India was in lockdown. So then you've got to try to write letters to the French government to try to get this guy to go over there, to try to get through, to get a visa so that we could try to get. So that was, you know, or even in England, trying to get these hallways done by a beautiful leather worker in England. And then how do you go and check things? Because your team has to do 7-day confinement to be able to look at something. So those things made COVID difficult.
But he stayed a week. Seven days, even more,
in a hotel waiting
just for a 2-hour meeting.
Perfect. Yeah, I can see that.
You know what I mean? There's words, there's drawings, and the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah, wonderful. So when is the project, when would you consider this project finished as far as you're concerned?
It's going to finish in the late spring, early summer this year. So it'll be released from the shipyard. And then we've got some artists, a very talented guy, Axel, who's going to be coming in, who's then going to do some paintings on the ship itself.
Oh.
And then we're going to do some other things. So, and then when it's finally kind of finished for the client early this summer.
Great. Will we see it at the Monaco Yacht Show? Do you know?
That's the idea. We're all crossing our fingers. The other thing about COVID is like, you know, the idea of schedule. And I know I'm hoping that our Mr. Udo doesn't hear this part of the conversation, but it's the same thing with most of our clients. I can understand that you start a project in, you know, old school, you had a schedule and you stuck by your schedule. But even when we're working on La Mamounia and certain projects for Van Cleef & Arpels during the period where everyone was in lockdown, it's a really hard thing because either do you push and push to try to get to your deadline date? But the problem is that you just don't have the right staff and you don't have all the right materials. And so people tend to cut corners and then you pay for that long term. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Paint peels off the wall, something isn't dried very well because you didn't have the... So is it more reasonable to add more time to that? And it's just kind of, I call it COVID tax. Whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
But if I'm in their shoes and it's my personal investment of time and energy and money... When it's finished, I want it to be finished. I don't want it to continue to linger for another 6 months or a year, 2 years after that. So, and it's always a fine balance between the triangle of cost, timing, and the quality of those things. And COVID has made that more difficult because the reality is, again, sometimes we had problems just getting packages of like a DHL or a courier package to England because things didn't arrive when they were guaranteed
right.
to arrive. And that just has a knockoff effect. So that means you just push everyone to do things in 20% less time, which means you're going to get 20% less quality.
Right.
Or do you add 20%? Yeah. Or do you add,
oh, you have to add time. Yeah.
Or do you add 20% more time because, you know what I mean? It's the long term that matters. So
tricky.
So the idea is we'll see you in Monaco,
right?
And hopefully other people. Well,
yes.
We'll decide.
Yeah.
So what's next for you? Are we going to see another yacht from you sometime soon?
You're going to see a bunch of stuff from us.
You will. We hope. So. We hope so because it's as you say it just before. We are always waiting for people to ring the bell, to call us because we say, okay, maybe they will see what we do. And if they like it, they will ask us. And for us to do a yacht was like one day it will come because what we do, the way we do it is so close to a yacht that it was just normal, but it was not coming. So, and I understand because it's a very particular world. It's costly. So when you invest this kind of money, you want the best professional.
You want a guarantee.
You want a guarantee.
In a way.
And you don't want to give this to someone who is maybe, maybe you like it, but maybe will not be able to make it. And I understand this very well. So, but after having done Kensho, and I hope people will appreciate. I hope, and it's more for you to tell us if it's a project which stands out, because there are many who are built everywhere.
Sure.
So not like cars, but there are many. Is it something special, or is it just? Okay, it's nice, bravo, but normal. This we don't know because we don't know well
this world. No.
We know when we design a restaurant, an hotel, a chair, we know this world very well. So we know when it stands, but for a yacht, we don't. And And there are many very talented designers and architects who are working in this world. So we are, so maybe there will be only one, okay? and we'll have tried to do our best. But anyway, we loved it. And we hope that we'll do another one.
But the reason you do it is because you have conviction. That's the right thing to do. Not because you think it's commercially the good thing or because so-and-so did this, so you're going to do that. Or you mean that we have a long history of doing firsts? You know what I mean?
We don't want to just to become... so that's why I say at the beginning, our childish dream. We don't want to repeat ourselves. We don't want to become professional, even if we are professional. But we don't want to be... Like we do things because we know how to do it and we do another one and another one and it's easy and a new yacht, I start. No, we want to be passionate.
Yeah, you're creators.
We feel that there is a lot to do in this field. We know we just have cracked. I don't know if we would just have crack. not true, but we have. I think we can go further. There are many things to do because the world is changing.
Absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm. And our relation with nature is very important. So. This open sea is of course amazing. The fact people are looking for these precious, special moments when you are connected like this with nature, with yourself or with your family, they are very precious. So this is. Important, but at the same time, we have to think about sustainability.
Yes.
We have to think of how we use energy, materials, time, and so that's why we think there is a lot to do in this world. Maybe to bring. Our fresh vision of people who are not coming from this world. And we want to keep this freshness in this world. We also feel that there is something to do just with the simple relation with water.
Yeah.
You remember the project Hermès did
yes.
years ago? Okay. The yacht was special. It was a little bit military too. But there was also all this project of almost island.
Yeah, floating island.
Floating island.
Yes, yeah.
So... This idea of playing in the water, to respect at the same time the ocean, to respect nature, and to really enjoy nature, not only to use nature. I think there is something beautiful to do there.
And your relationship with you know, how much do you move? How much do you not move? Are you know what I mean? Because there's, you know, mm-hmm. we're talking about cars and things. This idea that you know, you're always seduced by this streamlined quality of, let's say, sports car and speed. But and while I love that, and while you're going fast, it makes sense. But really, 90% of the time, you're not going fast. You're going slow.
Right.
There's new opportunities when you're going slow, spatially.
experientially. And so our definitions of luxury have changed. They are changing, right? And then so how you attack, let's say, something, a vessel like a yacht, which is really a very personal idea of what is luxury and what it is, how do you want to live in the world, gives you a lot more breadth for what you can begin to do.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's always amazing to me that, we design for a certain speed, or people tend to, and, you know, always going faster. But the truth is, what I hear from captains and, you know, some of the owners themselves, they very seldom use the full speed. It's and it's changing for sure, that people want experience and carve out special moments.
Yeah, no, but you know, it was a strange thing when we first started to come into this field as well. You mean about the whole thing of the dream, the experience, because, you know, a lot of them are a little bit, there's a certain amount of kind of showing your muscles in this field or in this world, right? Which I think is maybe an older way of thinking about things. And now people have the kind of the courage, I think, to go beyond that. And I got to say, there's a lot of talented people out there, but there's a little bit of disappointment as well about how to treat the actual, let's say, spaces themselves, because a lot of the times it was the application of a very expensive material onto a surface versus the idea of making a space. And so, you mean, while we're in buildings on land, it's just cheaper to extrude things, to take a tree and to make little extrusions from it, take plaster and extrude it. So, and when you're extruding, for the most part, you do things straight, then you cut it. So you get a lot of 90-degree corners because it's just easier and cheaper to do. But when you're getting onto a vessel which has a communication with the sea, it's all about curves and forces. So this question of sculpting something that's going around you, about opening up your eyes and not thinking, even for a second, without the movement, even if I'm at port, not thinking, am I in my hotel room? No. Okay, I'm on the vessel. Or I'm out in my beach house with the great view. No, okay, I forgot. Today I'm on the yacht. to feel it, and again, celebrate the fact that it's not like a day on land. It's something different. You want to celebrate it. Then you go to your beach house, you go to something else, or like Patrick's saying, is there more of a hybrid? Is there something else that we can begin to do, or another way that we can think of things that begin to unfold, pontoons? What's the idea of the shadow boat, the play boat? How can those two things begin to come together? How can we invite other people? What's the social factor? There's a lot of things that you can do, because in the end, it's not about, as it's, you know, when we started the idea of boundaries, it's not even about a vessel or an object. It's about how do you want to live, right? And then so how you want to live is really a combination between your social life, your personal life, and then your internal, inside your head life. And if that's through diving or doing something else, but finding a place for all those things, it's incredibly nourishing, because you've got the means to really go and explore things to a level.
Something important is that, coming from Nantes. In Nantes, you have a very important writer, which is Jules Verne.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and, I've heard of him.
and this idea of inventing and objects, inventing. And so the yacht, I think it's one thing, but we have to also, and it's maybe like what Mr. Rougerie was doing a few years ago, in inventing this idea of an island or a place where you can go. I think there is also something to do. A new, it's a little bit science fiction, but I think there is also a future for us like this.
Yeah. Oh, very interesting. Well, yeah. I can't wait to see something like that. That would be exciting.
Yeah. Because the strange thing is, you mean, it's how do we celebrate, how do we really enjoy travel? I mean, as a kid, I remember we loved having the road trip that was 8 hours, 10 hours. You mean the voyage and seeing the mountains and then hearing something in the music and even just, you know, a snack, it was a really beautiful moment. And now you can begin to think of
the voyage and the destination being the same thing or other things, or how can you combine the two? It opens up a lot of possibilities versus just, I try to get there as quick as possible, right? Which is normally the way, and we try to forget. Same things. We work with Air France. It's like, I love being in the clouds. I don't want to forget I'm in the clouds. I don't want to just put on my movie. Like, I only go on a plane if I can get a window seat so I can get near the clouds so we can see this incredible space up above, because it's unworldly. It's godly in a way. So how can we begin to...
Nice one.
Yeah, so we're always, we exchange photographs of clouds, you know what I mean? And being up in that space, because the landscape is always changing from wispy to craggy to being sandwiched in between these two things, and the quality of light, it's the most unbelievable immersive painting or art space you can ponder. Yeah, and that's why being on the boat, being next to the waves, finding uncharted, but finding a place that one can't get to, that you, this notion of discovery, all those things are just basic human things that we used to do when we got onto a raft and tried to go to the other side of the bay and find out if there's anything beyond this piece of seas, or you mean these really basic questions that people have had since the beginning of time of discovery, a little bit of gut churning. Is there going to be anything on the other side? Am I ever going to come back? You mean there's a certain point where we play homage to that in Kensho, in a weird way, in one of the bathrooms, about this thing of you're still, even in a yacht in this day and age, you're still part of this beautiful lineage of risk takers throughout history who have just gone and trusted their lives to this little vessel to go into the unknown. You know what I mean? It's
amazing. I love that thought.
Yeah, and you kind of forget about it. You strip away the luxury and whatever numbers and this and that, but it's still, I mean, storm, I've never been on one in a storm, but storm hits. You're in the same place, you know what I mean, as all the other generations that have come out. And I'm sure that it makes you realize that, we're human again.
Oh, yes.
You mean nothing's going to shield us from this. And it's your conversation with nature and the gods. It's incredible. Yeah. Strong.
Amazing. Well, listen, I know that I was told anyway that you had a client meeting for coming up pretty soon. So I want to perhaps thank you very, very much for your time and this very fascinating conversation. And I can't wait to see Kensho. And hopefully I'll see it with both of you, and it would be a very special treat.
That'd be great. Yeah. That'd be super, super, super. Thank you very much for taking the time to contact us.
Thank you, Cécile.
It's great.
No, it was great to meet you this way, and I look forward to the next time. Thank you again.
Thank you for listening to this week's Big Boat Interview, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to tune in on Friday to hear all the latest news of the world of superyachting. And in the meantime, don't forget to like and subscribe. Have a great week!